All right, let's set the stage for this one. What would it be like to be the youngest press secretary in U.S. history? Let's dive into the life of Caroline Leavitt.
Hey, I'm Leah, feeling curious and ready to explore this one today.
I'm Garrett, excited to be here, and welcome to Laid Back Learning with Leah and Garrett. Today, we're exploring the intriguing journey and career of Caroline Leavitt and how she ended up at the White House podium at such a young age.
So picture this. Back in college, I worked on a student media project, and I remember getting pushback for questioning a headline that felt, you know, a little too confident for the facts we had. It taught me early to ask where information comes from and why it's framed a certain way. Caroline Leavitt wrote in college that the media was, in her words, frankly crooked and sometimes just plain old false. I don't go that far, but I get the impulse to be skeptical. That thread of media critique shows up again and again in her career. Let's unpack who she is. Caroline Claire Leavitt was born in 1997 in Atkinson, New Hampshire, and comes from a small business family. They ran an ice cream stand, and her dad owned a used truck dealership in Plaistow. She said that background shaped her views on taxes and regulations. She's a practicing Roman Catholic and credits Catholic schooling for instilling discipline, public service values, and her anti-abortion stance. In college at St. Anselm, she studied communications with a political science minor, jumped into campus media, founded the broadcasting club, and wrote for the student paper, calling herself the token conservative on campus. After a string of internships, she rocketed into national politics, and by late 2024, was tapped to become the youngest White House press secretary in U.S. history, serving in 2025 and into 2026.
Yeah, and her communications style has been described as combative. If you think of a press briefing like a chess match, she often opens with a bold gambit. Instead of trading quiet pawns in the center, she moves a knight early to challenge a queen. In practice, that meant calling on non-traditional or right-leaning outlets first, and sometimes going hard at legacy media, even calling a reporter from The Hill a left-wing hack. Supporters framed that as accountability. Critics saw antagonism. Either way, it set the tone.
Early days, she was a multi-sport kid and a standout in softball, named an Eagle Tribune All-Star in 2014 and again in 2015. By around her sophomore year of college, she stepped away from athletics to chase media and politics. She interned with NBC Sports Boston, then at the New Hampshire Institute of Politics, a campus hub that attracts presidential hopefuls during the primaries. She also interned for a U.S. senator and at WMUR, the local TV station, and wrote regularly for the student paper. In 2016, she penned that sharp critique of the media as frankly crooked. Interestingly, even though she applied to Fox News for an internship, she ended up in the White House Office of Presidential Correspondence in 2016 and 2017, writing letters on behalf of the president. That's the office that reads and replies to citizen mail, the front line of constituent messaging.
She also did a semester in Rome at John Cabot University. After graduating in 2019, the first in her immediate family to earn a college degree, she took a full-time role in that same White House correspondence shop. It's like starting at the mailroom of the messaging machine, but it's where you learn tone, speed, and how to translate public sentiment into official words. She really leaned into her identity on campus as the token conservative, founding the broadcasting club to get more voices on the air. It's a straight line from that to building relationships with political media later on.
Then the rise. In June 2020, she was promoted to associate director in presidential correspondence. Soon after, a friend who was a personal aide to the president referred her to Kayleigh Mahaney, who was the White House press secretary at the time, and Leavitt became an assistant press secretary. That's a big leap and shows how personal networks in Washington can act like an elevator when you're already in the building. That same year, she attended a Rose Garden event, later identified as the start of a White House COVID outbreak, and she later tested positive herself. By January 2021, just before the administration ended, she shifted to Capitol Hill as communications director for Representative Elise Stefanik, a Republican from New York aligned with Trump's wing of the party.
And then she runs. In July 2021, she announced a bid for New Hampshire's 1st Congressional District and within 3 days raised $100,000, a quick jolt of fuel for a first-time candidate. The 2022 primary pitted her against Matt Maurer, the previous GOP nominee. She argued he wasn't pro-Trump enough, pointing to his past advisory role for former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. She got endorsements from Republicans like Ted Cruz, Lauren Boebert, Jim Jordan, and Elise Stefanik, won the primary in September 2022, but lost the general to the Democratic incumbent, Chris Pappas, that November. There was also a campaign finance complaint in 2022, and later, in January 2025, she filed 17 amended FEC reports disclosing over $326,000 in previously undisclosed debts, including roughly $200,000 that came from donations over the legal limit that had not been repaid. After that race, she worked for MAGA Inc., a super PAC that can raise and spend unlimited funds independently, and she appeared in a Project 2025 training video, an effort to prep Republican appointees to navigate and reshape federal agencies. By January 2024, she was National Press Secretary for Donald Trump's campaign. On the personal side, she got engaged in late 2023 to Nicholas Riccio, a New Hampshire real estate developer 32 years older than her, and they welcomed a son in July 2024. She returned to work within a week, on the day of the attempted assassination of Trump by Thomas Crooks. That is a lot in a short window.
Then the podium. In November 2024, President-elect Trump named her White House press secretary, making her the youngest ever. She started the job in January 2025 and unusually was given a smaller West Wing office while the traditional press secretary's office went to Taylor Budowich, who served as deputy chief of staff for communications and personnel. Physical space in the West Wing often maps to influence, so that signaled a reorganization of communications power. She also changed briefing room dynamics by adding a new media seat and prioritizing it in briefings, frequently calling it first. These outlets were typically right-leaning or digital native. In February 2025, she said the White House would select who joined the presidential press pool, the small rotating group that covers the president at events with limited space and shares those notes with the rest of the press, which was a break with precedent. In March 2025, Axios reported the White House looked at changing the briefing room seating chart, even floating the idea of naming her president of the White House Correspondents Association, the journalists' group that helps manage access. That would have upended longstanding self-governance norms. Her first big briefing was in January 2025, when she opened by elevating non-traditional outlets and, during that session, falsely said $50 million taxpayer dollars were going to fund condoms in Gaza. Reporters traced the claim to a misunderstanding of a government initiative called DOGE, which related to an HIV prevention grant in Gaza province in Mozambique, not the Gaza Strip. That episode underscored how quickly a misread detail can enter official discourse. Later, a New York Times analysis in April 2025 found she called on reporters standing along the briefing room perimeters about a quarter of the time, from outlets like the Gateway Pundit, Real America's Voice, One America News Network, The Daily Signal, Lindell TV, The Daily Wire, and Turning Point USA. And there was a notable lawsuit, Associated Press v. Budowich in 2025, where the AP alleged the White House threatened to restrict AP access unless it used the term Gulf of America instead of Gulf of Mexico. Leavitt was named as a defendant, and AP's Zeke Miller, the AP's chief White House correspondent, was directly involved in that dispute. The case centers on whether that would be compelled speech and a First Amendment problem. It is contested in court.
On top of that, those amended FEC filings from her 2022 race hung around as a storyline in early 2025. There were other moments that shaped public perception. In May 2025, a photo of her bottle feeding her son while working went viral and sparked conversations about caregiving in high-pressure roles. In November 2025, the mother of one of her nephews was detained by Immigration and Customs Enforcement which connected her family personally to immigration enforcement outcomes. In December 2025, she announced she was pregnant again, reportedly the first press secretary to be pregnant while serving, and her daughter was born in May 2026. By August 2026, President Trump announced she would resign as press secretary at the end of that month to spend more time with family and take on an outside advisor role. So she left the podium, but stayed in the messaging orbit. Why did the new media seat matter so much, do you think?
Agenda setting. The first question in a briefing often frames the narrative for the day. By institutionalizing that seat and calling it first, she ensured ideologically aligned or digital-first outlets set the opening tone. That nudges legacy outlets to respond rather than initiate. It's like choosing the first track on a playlist that colors how you hear the rest of the album. Now the complicated part, there's a lingering question about her public and private views on the 2020 election. Publicly, she said she believed Donald Trump was the legitimate winner, citing irregularities and chaos, while also acknowledging that Joe Biden was certified by the Electoral College. The Washington Post reported in March 2025 that privately she believed Trump lost, but that private view has not been confirmed by her. That tension, if true, raises questions about how political messaging operates when the messenger's private assessment may differ from public statements.
I see two lanes there. One is strict spokesman mode, where you present the administration's official position, even if your private analysis is more nuanced. The other is a personal integrity lane, where you avoid statements you don't believe are accurate. In a role like press secretary, the first lane often wins out. That's the job. But it can blur lines if the public senses a gap between what's said and what the evidence shows, and that can erode trust over time.
Real talk. The audience tends to expect clarity when the stakes are that high. She also denounced the January 6 attack and said she didn't believe Trump incited it. There were now deleted tweets where she praised Vice President Mike Pence for certifying the results and praised Capitol Police Officer Eugene Goodman for leading rioters away from the Senate chamber. Deleting those later drew attention. Supporters might say it was message discipline. Critics saw a shift to align with the base. Either way, it shows how public record evolves when political winds change.
So here's my take. Communications pros often operate in a zone where truth, framing, and loyalty intersect. If the reporting about her private view were accurate, I'd prefer the press secretary stick to verified facts and avoid endorsing claims that courts and certifications didn't support. But I also get the reality of representing a principal. That's a pretty tough tightrope in politics.
I hear you. I lean toward the clarity side. If you can't say something you believe, maybe pivot to process. Here's what the state certified, here are the court outcomes, and here's what we're doing next. It's less emotionally satisfying for a base, but it's durable. And in the long run, durability matters for public trust.
Speaking of public perception, that viral photo of her bottle feeding her son while working in May 2025 really landed. It made a lot of people recalibrate what the press secretary job looks like day to day. Not just a podium and a binder, but caregiving, sleep schedules, and very human logistics. That's a curveball, and it probably helped more folks imagine themselves in roles like that, which is honestly pretty cool.
What if she had won the 2022 general in New Hampshire? If Representative Caroline Leavitt had gone to Congress, we might have seen her pursue committee assignments that fit her communications and media focus, maybe House administration or oversight, where messaging battles are frequent. She could have built a freshman to leadership trajectory, especially with allies like Elise Stefanik in the mix. And if she'd been in Congress in 2024, I'm not sure she would have left to be press secretary in 2025.
Totally. And without her at the White House podium, the new media seat might not have become a formalized first call. Another press secretary might have kept the traditional pecking order, which could mean no big showdown with the White House Correspondents Association over seating. And maybe the Associated Press lawsuit over Gulf of America never materializes in the same way. Different people, different playbooks.
Plus, As a member of Congress, she might have carved out a niche on media and tech policy, or on immigration, given the family episode later in 2025. Her communications instincts could have translated into high-profile hearings or coalition building. It's one of those moments where a close loss redirected her path straight to the national microphone instead.
All right, let's roll on out of here. Stay curious, and thanks for hanging with us on Laid Back Learning with Leah and Garrett.
And that's where we'll leave it for now. Appreciate the time together, and we'll catch you next time.